Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the podcast that teaches you how to identify the storytelling elements and art of professional wrestling. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the Second City Saint, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you? And I guess my first question is, when did Lou Ray become the Second City, and what is the First City?
Then I, in that sense, I'm not sure on the timeline, but I guess the First City would have to be like Harrisonburg, which is like real close to it. But
big glow up for Harrisonburg.
Big and, glow up, yeah, yeah.
In our podcast,
I'm doing good, man. It's Andrew. I might even say it's clobbering time.
Would you agree? Yeah. We should start a little counter of how many CM puns we're going to have during this episode. I guess that puts us at three within the first minute. This episode is going to be a little different than normal. Just like CM Punk and AEW, we don't have a script that we're going off of for this one.
This is fresh off the cuff, almost like someone handed us a microphone and they said, "We want you to air your grievances."
Yeah. And they said, "You're going to love this." I rewatched that Punk documentary before Friday.
Yeah.
So that moment is very fresh in my mind. You may be looking, as a listener of our podcast, you might be looking at the title of this episode and be like, "Wait a minute, didn't I listen to this episode like a year ago?" It is true that we did an episode previously called CM Punk Returns, where we talked about his entire career and him coming back for WWE Backstage. Rest in peace. And now he's back seemingly for real. If there's one thing that was very clear in his promo on Rampage, it was that he is back, end quote.
And he's got a lot of time.
He does have time, which is funny. Which is a funny thing to say to try to sound like intimidating, or like maybe not intimidating, but to try to sound like monumental. It just kind of makes you sound like you're lazy. You're like, "I got nothing but time.
I've got all the time in the world."
But we don't have all the time in the world. So let's start kind of framing what we want to do in this episode. There was a lot that happened between Friday and Monday night in wrestling this past weekend. This really was the end of the summer, and depending on who you ask, it was either the beginning of the summer Punk, or it was kind of the do-over of WrestleMania with actual like fans. You know what it felt like to me? It felt like both the beginning of new eras, the ending of old eras, and it felt like every major wrestling promotion were making creative choices that were reactions to what other companies were doing. So I feel like this weekend could be one that we look at years down the line as like, that was a really important beat in the story of the new wrestling landscape. So we're going to try to record what our thoughts were in the moment, and then we'll see if we got it right or wrong from a historical perspective, like 5 or 10 years from now, depending on who who is doing the documentary, you know.
Sure. Yeah. I agree. It was a massive weekend that so many things happened, and again, it was if you even just take away the fact of CM Punk returning, which is easily the news of the weekend, but
Roman Reigns doesn't think so, but we'll get into that, I guess.
I'm aware. Yeah. Even just taking that away, I mean, it was still SummerSlam weekend. It was WrestleMania Part 2 for WWE and all this other stuff going on. So it was a lot. It was big.
Yeah, so we're going to address things both big and small. I have a lot of thoughts. It was also like a really weird weekend creatively. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things.
Personally or for wrestling?
Oh no, for wrestling. I think. I guess personally too.
Yeah, I had a real weird weekend, man.
I had really strange reactions to a number of different matches, or I guess I feel like the way that certain matches were constructed were
sure.
odd.
Yeah,
I'm not even willing to say like bad in some cases.
I can say bad in some cases.
But like it was interesting at the very least. Nothing was bad to a mm-hmm. point that I don't know, some stuff was bad. We're going to get
there
into
was,
it.
There was a few things that were bad. I'm going to have to clarify. But
there's a lot to talk about with why they were bad or like how they became that way. So we're going to go in chronological order. And we're going to start with Friday night, not Friday night SmackDown. We're going to jump all the way to 10 p.m. Eastern time with the second episode of AEW Rampage from the United Center in Chicago.
The first dance.
I'm shocked they didn't say the words "the first dance" more than they did.
Because like they were advertising it as like, you know, one of AEW's many, like, this is just an episode of television, but we're going to advertise it as a special event thing mm-hmm. with the first dance and all that. And I get that it was a reference to like Jordan and the Bulls and everything, but I couldn't get past the fact I was like, dude, this is the second episode. It's like, come on.
It's funny. I wonder if they bridged the idea of like, a few weeks ago being like, can we actually like push our
can
first
we, like,
episode?
Hold
and TNT was like,
that?
No, you've already sold tickets. you have to do this. They should have just called it the second dance. They would have been really funny.
Exactly.
But the show started and almost immediately AEW let their fans off the hook with the... I think they called it the most anticipated announcement.
The what I heard a lot of people reporting the phrase, the worst kept secret in history in wrestling. And that was intentional.
Yeah. I guess that's my first, like, if you're listening, you probably know, I guess we should state what happened for anyone who was under a rock, anyone who was under the rock, and that CM Punk returned at the top of AEW Rampage came out and delivered a promo. Well, to get to the promo in itself in a bit, but I want to start with this idea of it being the worst kept secret. How did knowing for sure that CM Punk was going to start that show affect your enjoyment in any positive or negative way? I guess I should also say, like, what percentage confident were you that he was coming out by the time it started?
Yeah, I think it's before it happened, prior to actually seeing him on my screen, I think there was a thought in my mind of like, oh, you know, knowing this much beforehand, knowing that he's probably most likely going to show up, it might take away from that surprise. But in retrospect, after the fact, like, I don't think so. I think I was still so hyped to see him show up, knowing that he was going to show up and everything. Like, I think it didn't take away from me. And the realization of that, I think, is a really great thing in that, because Punk had said this in I think maybe the media, whatever, after Rampage, about how...
I think the word they use is scrum.
The media scrum. That's what it is. I didn't want to say scrum and be wrong, so I'm like, that's a weird word.
It's a rugby word, But continue, in the media scrum. Yeah.
So he had said that, you know, this was the worst kept secret in wrestling, and that was intentional. And because having people talk about it and the possibility of it hypes everything up. And yes, it was widely known that this was definitely going to happen. But the beauty of it is there was no like concrete evidence besides that heavy speculation. Like there was no reporter or like confirmed AEW personnel saying this is happening. There's no Twitter post the day of confirming it. There's none of that. And so it left that sliver, that tiny sliver of doubt, like maybe he won't be there. In the moment, though, that was also terrifying because I was like, man, they're going to burn that building down if Punk doesn't show up. So,
yeah, it could. I mean, it could have honestly been the end of AEW had he not.
It truly could. Like they had built it up too much at this point. And I think at some point in the weeks leading up to it, I started to realize I was like, OK, he's absolutely coming because. I mean, if even with obviously all of the little CM Punk Easter eggs they've been putting on Dynamite every single week leading up and all these other little things, acknowledging at some point AEW like acknowledged the Christian debut and how the hype got too out of control. They hyped up this debut and people took it and ran with it and went a little too far. They were hyping names that Christian just couldn't live up to. So when Christian showed up, people were a little let down on that. And having AEW acknowledge that and be like, you know, this, you know, like this debut, it's kind of exactly who you think it is almost. So I appreciated that. In terms of the actual debut and stuff, actually, I was a little shocked. I didn't think it would be the first thing. And actually, and again, in retrospect, I understand now why it had to be the first thing. But so I was a little shocked at that. Like, Rampage starts, they're doing the intros and everything. The music stops, and then you can hear the CM Punk chants just overtaking that building, like that was all you could hear, and then immediately his music hits. And at first I was like, they're doing it right now, but again, like, it had to be the first thing of the show.
Yeah, I think there are strategic reasons for it being the first one from both a live and home television audience perspective. I think for the live crowd, it would have been really difficult for it would have been unfair to the performers to ask them to go out and do any other kind of segment before, because the fans would have just continued to be like, this is the thing that we want.
And also because, I mean, the live crowd had already waited their time. Like, I'm pretty sure they filmed Dark and maybe even a Dark Elevation episode beforehand, so they've already watched an hour or two of wrestling. So
yeah, and I think that for the at-home audience, there is a idea of trying to use SmackDown as a lead-in, in a sense, right? Like, there were enough media outlets, like major media outlets, before the CM Punk debut that were kind of reporting on, like, hey, this is a thing that might happen tonight.
That is a really good point. I didn't think about so like, there the, are, the immediate channel switcher,
Yeah, so they, like, they didn't want, I think, to take, or they wanted to take advantage of that kind of curiosity. And it made for an amazing moment. I think I was only 100% sure that CM Punk was coming out maybe at like 4 p.m. on Friday. There was some radio interview, and Tony Khan said something to the effect of, like, well, tonight we're going, like, I know what it is that people want to see, and we're going to give them what they want to see.
Exactly. Like, okay. I think the quote was, exactly that. It was something along the lines of, like, I think what everyone thinks is happening tonight is probably happening.
Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't seen it yet, everyone should go watch the video that AEW has posted on YouTube. That gives a view into what it's like to be a production director for a live sporting event. They just uploaded this video where you see the people behind the screens looking at all of the camera monitors and directing which one they cut back and forth between. And it was very fascinating to see how they on the fly build the tension for, you know, emotionally charged moments like that.
Picking out the people in the crowd to jump to. And
yeah. Looking for tears.
Looking for that one crying guy.
So CM Punk comes out. He crowd surfs a little bit before getting to the ring.
Got a huge pop.
He's wearing a hoodie, so you know at some point he's going to take off that hoodie. and then we get a promo that I think is about like seven, is it like 17 minutes or something like that?
Was
total?
It that long?
I don't know. Like the promo wasn't that like long, but I think the segment, the like from Cult of Personality hitting to to Punk leaving the ring.
That entrance, we were, because we had some people over watching it, we were actually joking because he was taking such so long and such amount of time. We were like, this song's gonna end before he gets to the ring. Like, Cult of Personality is not that long of a song.
Yeah, that is true. But he did get there, and he delivered a promo that I would say was like, for something that he said was very off the cuff, it seemed like oddly specific. Like, he seemed like he had a awareness of exactly how much time he had and did not want to start by going over it. We could like hit what the highlights of the promo were, but what were your favorite moments of that segment?
I dug like the little things he did. I dug the him sitting down in Indian style in the ring, just, you know, reminiscent of the pipe bomb. I really enjoyed the swerve that he gave us about him leaving Ring of Honor with tears in his eyes, and how he was saying, this was the day I left professional wrestling, and enunciated the professional wrestling part, and then talked about how today was the day I returned to professional wrestling, you know, kind of letting them know, like, you know, WWE, I tried my hardest there, but it never was going to be what I wanted it to be. And even though it worked out well, like, this is what I wanted was professional wrestling, and I'm back now. So I love that. I mean, I love the Darby stuff with Sting. I think that was, what a perfect way, like, one, like, 8-minute promo perfectly set up a match that is, might be my most hype match at All Out now. Like, and obviously it has the, you know, the added layer of it being Punk's first match back, but still, like, that's an amazing pairing of Punk versus Darby with Sting in the corner. Like, I am so hyped for that. That's going to be so cool to watch.
Yeah,
so
it's going to be weird. And I really,
were you
going to
say
really
your favorite part
way.
Was the ice cream bars?
No, but I thought that was, I think sometimes in professional wrestling promos in particular, that if you think of them as a monologue, that sometimes, or not sometimes, most of the times for wrestling promos, the most quoted bits, the best bits, the things that become iconic are in the middle of the monologue, which is weird. I feel like it's antithetical to monologues in film or stage, where like usually
you remember the first line or the last line.
Yeah, you have like a hypothesis and then you like leave on a last word. And I felt like Punk's promo actually did something of note at both the top and the bottom. I think the ice cream bars thing felt like a throwback to something that Andy Kaufman used to do at comedy shows of his, where he would end the show by giving milk and cookies to everyone in the audience. And like, of course, CM Punk has a connotation with ice cream because WWE storyline. And I think that if you have concerns about Punk returning to AEW, it is probably connected to that narrative of AEW is relying too much on WWE guys, right? Guys who have already been there, done that. And I think that it's really important that the first thing that Punk said was, I feel, you guys are making me feel like Britt Baker in Pittsburgh, in response to the pop. And I think that that was not just to, like, a funny joke, like start with a joke kind of thing. I think it was purposefully to say, I am here to put other people over.
Yes.
That is the sense that I got from that. Although I loved the ice cream too. Like,
I just thought it was like just a quick little dig, you know, like, I got, here's some ice cream bars, and I just loved it. I thought it was funny.
It is interesting that in the days following that WWE personalities like Booker T or like Roman Reigns publicly made comments about Punk's debut and not being impressed by it, right? And the idea was like, from Booker T specifically, it was like he was focusing too much on WWE. I find that interesting because he never uses the letters WWE.
He didn't say it, but to be fair, it almost felt like he like purposely avoided WWE. Yeah. The only real definite mention we got was him talking about, I had to leave for myself because I wasn't going to get better where I was at, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So then it's like, does it leave a bitter kind of feeling or sour feeling in your mouth? Is it actually worse than that? He doesn't say like, hey, it's been this long since you've seen me in WWE. Is it like by not talking about it, has he actually said more about it kind of thing?
I don't know. I think I appreciate that he didn't reference it much, because I feel like there's a certain kind of fan who just wanted him to go out there and just shit on WWE. And maybe, you know, that might have had its place at some point, but I actually really appreciate the fact that his goal wasn't to go out there and shit on WWE and all the things that how they messed up and his time in the company. It was, like you said, it was to put over AW and AW stars and talk about what he can bring to this company. He has the time to tell new stories and put over people. And so I really appreciated that, actually.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's been refreshing that it continues a streak of, let's say, disgruntled former WWE wrestlers who go to AEW and don't air their grievances on AEW programming. They'll do Jericho's podcast and talk about stuff. And they'll do, you know, they'll do videos on Twitch. They'll do oral sessions and like all that kind of stuff. But they won't. They're doing the opposite of what early day TNA did, of like, if someone switched, you knew the first thing that was going to happen is they were going to give them a mic and tell them to go air their grievances, you know?
Exactly.
So it's refreshing to see a focus on their own product within the actual confines of their television programming, right?
Yeah.
What do you expect from CM Punk in the ring and All Out?
So I'm not sure on this. To be fair, like, Punk looked to be in great shape. He's not that old. Like, if you really think about it, like, Punk is 43 now, 44, something like that, mid-40s. So that's old, yes, for wrestling, but it's not that old. And so I don't expect to see, you know, a Rey Fénix level of in-ring ability or something out of him. But to be fair, Punk was never the best wrestler. Like, he's good. He's very good. But Punk was a character, and Punk did great at storytelling and promos and things like that. So I think that at All Out, we're going to see a really good match with Darby. Darby's going to do some really dangerous stuff. And maybe he can push Punk to the limit. And also, it's a chance for Punk to, you know, remind us why, you know, why people started to gravitate towards him in the first place. And again, it was a character thing, but you have to back it up somewhat with some in-ring prowess. So yeah. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for potential feuds after that and everything, but
Would you be surprised if I told you that CM Punk is older going to AEW now than Hulk Hogan was when he went to WCW?
Oh my god, really?
Yeah. Punk is 42 right now, and I believe Hogan was 40 on the dot when
everybody looks so much older back in the day. Like, good God.
It's like when you look at your parents' high school yearbook and you're like, who are all these like regional managers?
Like, these 18-year-olds with like full mustaches and
wearing suits. Yeah. So yeah, something is weird in the water. But I was gonna echo your comments there that CM Punk in the time, in his heyday, it seemed like he was a, you know, top five technical wrestler in the world. And that may have been true then, or like for then on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his influence in wrestling, like him and AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan and a lot of the ROH people of that time, is that you see that everyone who has started training after that feels like there is a certain basement of wrestling ability that you need to have to be mm-hmm. viable. Mm-hmm. So it is funny to think back to CM Punk as being like a technical wizard when really now like it seems antiquated compared to today's stuff. So that's why I think it will actually, like, I would be shocked if his match with Darby was more than like 10 minutes.
Really?
I think it will be more on the like entertainment spectacle. Mm-hmm. I feel like if there are other people to debut, that maybe they will come and help even the odds against Sting being at ringside. I think that people will be so elated in that town to see CM Punk wrestling again, that they will be happy to see this kind of, you know, sports entertainment as mm-hmm. opposed to wrestling. And I think you gotta ease Punk back into it would be my guess.
I would agree. Yeah, you should ease him back in. His first match back shouldn't be a 25-minute, you know, Iron Man match or something like that.
Full Broadway, 60-minute time limit. Yeah. Nah.
So, like, I actually agree. No, yeah, I think this Darby match is definitely going to be more about what you said, the spectacle, which it absolutely will be, because it has that added layer to it. This is Punk's first match back in, like, 7 years. And with Sting ringside and everything. I mean, and also, like, the entrances themselves and everything are going to take a good 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
10 minutes for the match. Like, you're looking at a 20-minute segment already, so.
Yeah, that's a gripe that you just made me think of a thing I want to talk about with SummerSlam, is that show was 4 hours and 10 minutes, and I feel like 2 hours of it was entrances.
man.
So CM Punk returns. We could talk about everything else that happened on Rampage, but honestly, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I felt so bad for those other people, because, like, if you think about what that episode of Rampage meant to other people, so, like, Jade Cargill and Daniel Garcia in the main event wrestling in front of, like, 15,000 plus people, like, that's, I don't know if that's ever happened for either of them or something. So, like, that's a huge moment for them, aside from the fact of CM Punk returning. But
yeah, and like, the audience didn't like check out. They rode that wave of momentum the whole mm-hmm. time. But like mm-hmm. in the grand scheme of the weekend, CM Punk's debut is what sucked up most of the air.
It was the biggest news of the weekend, no matter what anyone else tried to do, it was always going to be the biggest news of the weekend.
And they tried.
And actually, Sarah and I talked about this. We were like spitballing one day. She asked me, she said, is there anything that WWE could do this weekend to like be a bigger news story than Punk coming back? And immediately I was like, no, not a chance. And then when I started thinking about it, I was like, wait, is there anything they can do? Like, Becky coming back would be cool, but like,
that was the one thing that I was like, that is a bullet that they have had and known that they could pull that mm-hmm. lever in case of emergency, and we can talk about how they handled that
they had that one, and I was like, they could do that, but even still, like, that's nothing compared to CM Punk coming back. And I think we even spitballed Lesnar potentially and other stuff, and my favorite answer, she was like, what if Vince McMahon died? And I was like, well, technically they've already done that.
Yeah, they've
like,
done
they
it.
They tried that. And she was like, no, I mean, actually, like, what if he really
died? He
did
that just to spite CM Punk.
And that's when we started spitballing. I was like, well, that would be bigger news than CM Punk coming back. And also, it would be a genuine, like, the final straw, the last like middle finger of Vince McMahon to CM Punk that like I'd rather die than live in a world where you're wrestling again.
I think that there's I mean if we're talking about what dominated the news cycle, not just in a wrestling world but in the sports world and the kind of general world, like CM Punk's debut was a huge, probably massive, like a bigger crossover news event than people expected. And maybe they shouldn't have, because his pipe bomb was something that was reported widely from like sport, like the Grantland did like a whole like 10,000 word essay about it. And that brought a lot of lapsed fans back. So you had to anticipate that this would also do the same thing, and you had immediately Deadspin and Rolling Stone and Sports Illustrated reporting on it. And so I do think that the one thing WWE could have done that maybe would have got as much mainstream news is if John Cena had won the world title in the main event.
It was that. My other option, I was like, maybe if The Rock came back, but...
Yeah. 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 You gotta fight fire with fire, and I mean everyone in WWE kept trying publicly to slight CM Punk by being like, well, he's not as big of a star as The Rock or Austin was, and it's like, well, they also weren't on SummerSlam, so you didn't have someone who was bigger than him. Although SummerSlam, WWE reported today, they don't report about their own stats all that often, but on WWE.com it seems like they felt it was important to point out that SummerSlam was the most watched version of SummerSlam ever, which is a great headline, but it's also something that I feel like you should kind of expect as like streaming platforms become bigger and easier. And
but also, like, do we believe them?
I believe it in this sense.
I just feel like they're so notorious for, like, you know, fudging numbers and things, and like I don't know.
Well, here's what I know for a fact is that I think that this was an experiment to see how they would run on Saturday nights instead of Sunday nights. And I think from an international standpoint, it was much better to run Saturday because people in England could watch at a reasonable time without having to go to work the next day.
Yeah, that's true.
And I know that, you know, more people have Peacock than had the network. And you also had them doing SummerSlam in movie theaters this whole weekend too. So there were literally more available options for people to watch SummerSlam. So even if they fudge the numbers a bit, like worst case scenario, it was probably close to the most watched.
Do you think
they've ever had?
This is going to be a reason for WWE to shift pay per views to Saturdays now?
Yeah. Yeah, I think every single one will be Saturdays now.
See, I think, if anything, I'm amazed that it took them this long to finally do that. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Ugh. It's also weird, too, because it's like everyone wants to avoid...
getting longer and everything, so...
That's true. Everyone wants to avoid going up to head-to-head with football, so like that is also like another reason where I'm like, why haven't they moved, or at least move all the fall pay-per-views to Saturdays, because you don't have to deal with this as another ratings issue of a thing you're going up against. But I don't know. It seemed, I guess also like if WWE has decided that they're not going to care as much about the 18 to 35 demographic that AEW is going after, then Saturday is a great night to put your shows on, because those people are the people who are going to be going out and doing other stuff. Exactly. So, yeah, I like that it was on a Saturday. I think that they will they will keep it there. I think they have incentive to keep it there. Here's my big question about SummerSlam. Do you think that there were any creative changes to the show at the last minute in response to the success of Punk's return?
I do. And it might not be the one you're thinking of.
Oh, interesting. Do elaborate, good sir.
I mean, it just like it's one of the big returns, but I think that the Becky one was always planned, but I think Brock was a last minute thing. I'm not saying that Cena was going to win. I honestly don't think he was going to win, but I think Brock coming back is Vince called Brock like Friday night and was like, can I put you on a private jet to Vegas?
Yeah, there's no time to change your hair. Mm-hmm.
You can come in your weird cowboy outfit with your jeans and your cowboy boots. And keep the top knot hair if you want. I think Vince called Brock like Friday night and was like, can I get you on a plane?
Okay. Yeah.
Do you agree or do you think Brock was a long-term plan?
I think that they've probably been talking to Brock for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was decided kind of close to the event that is when he was going to come back. I know that sounded like me really thinking through some stuff. I don't know. I guess maybe... I can buy both, and I'm excited to see if it's something that we find out more about later. I'm still trying to find out any information about Sasha's absence from SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, I only know what they have reported, and to be fair, like to walk you through it, I was very confused leading up to everything, of course, because the mm-hmm. reports of like Sasha potentially had COVID and wasn't going to be there, but they kept advertising the match as is. We even were confused when like the beginning of when SummerSlam started, they ran the promo video for the whole pay-per-view for all the matches, and mm-hmm. the Sasha Bianca match was on the promo, and yeah. I made a mental note of it.
It was also certainly one of the like three or four matches that they were selling the pay-per-view with.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then so in the moment, like we're like the match before or something, we're talking like, I don't know, like is the Sasha match still going to happen? I was like, they have advertised the promo the day of, so she has to be here. And the Bianca coming out and they advertised the match, I was like, okay, she's here. And the second they swerved us and they said like Carmella is going to face her now, again, like I should have known, because that means Becky is coming back. But in the moment, I think I was just a little too emotional, and I was just like, this is trash. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. How can you promote a match that you've known is not going to happen with the intention of swerving people like this? Like, this is a horrible decision.
Yeah.
Ultimately, to be corrected with Becky showing up, which was a great decision, but then they ended that the way it did,
followed
which
by
was
another
a horrible
terrible
decision.
Yeah, yes. That was. I wonder if that sequence was noted to death by everyone backstage. It felt like there were like instead of picking one very simple, you know, story to tell, that they tried mm-hmm. to cram in a bunch of, you know, turns and like, well, what if Carmella is a red herring? And it's like, I don't know that yeah. you need a red herring. Although I really want a wrestler whose gimmick is that their name is red herring and that they are used for swerves. But, okay. So let's, for people who didn't see, let's go beat by beat with the story that they tell in that segment. Okay. I think this is the most infamous part of SummerSlam to me.
Yes. And this, and like, this just this segment is like a little microcosm of like just WWE in general, of mm-hmm. that they do these things that are so questionable, and then for a split second it all makes sense and you're like, oh, it's genius, to ultimately be destroyed again. And it's just this weird sandwich of good and bad and good and bad and good and bad. Like,
so you're right. They play this incredible promo for the match. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the first mistake, that like, if you, and they know it's not like Sasha was ready to go until 3 minutes before, and then they pulled her out. I'm assuming, like, I think we would have known instantly if that is what happened. So I think playing that promo video is negligible to an audience. I think it's kind of cruel. But Bianca comes out.
Champion comes out first. Never a good sign.
Yep. They announce that Sasha is not there. I've talked about before on my on this podcast about my experience with going to WWE live shows where the card is subject to change, and when the main event person isn't there, they announce it at the beginning of the show in case you want to get a refund. That is not what they did here.
Nope.
They announced no Sasha Banks, and they send Carmella out to wrestle instead. What do you think was going through her head as a performer, Carmella, at that moment? Yeah.
I mean,
this is the person I feel worse for, actually.
I do feel bad for her, because she was the sacrificial lamb here, in that she had to have known, no matter what, she's getting booed.
Yeah.
And not even a thing of, like, if she's a heel right now or if people don't like Carmella. It's just like, you're not who we were told was going to be here. So, like, she was fully the sacrificial lamb, and I feel bad for her on that stint. So I assume she was just like, well, this is my job and I got to do my job.
Yeah.
But so at this point, up to this point in the action, I am livid. I am so angry. I cannot fathom how this company can justify advertising this match to fans, having people buy tickets, show up, buy your pay-per-view, to change it in the moment to a match that nobody wanted to see.
Yeah.
Continue.
So then it seems like we're about to start the match with Carmella, and then the music hits and we get the triumphant return of Becky Lynch. And Becky comes down to the ring, disposes of Carmella, and then says, hey, how about we fight for the title right now? Right?
And at this point, I'm loving it.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
Completely turned and changed my tune.
Yeah, you're like Rob Schneider in The Waterboy, where you've gone from being like, oh, we suck again, to like, oh, we're great. And here's the question, though. Because I feel like your reaction is pretty universal to people's reactions in this time. Wouldn't it be more efficient in telling a story to go straight from saying Sasha Banks is not here tonight, she cannot compete, but we have a replacement, and go straight to Becky Lynch returning? Because you don't give an audience member time to form the opinion of Sasha is not here, this sucks.
Yeah.
Because if Becky just comes out, then it's like, great, here.
That is fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a totally fair point. It makes the whole Carmella storyline and everything just unnecessary. Like, it's fine that it happened, but it wasn't needed. If you just announce Sasha Banks can't be here, here's the replacement, Becky's music hits. Like, still the exact same thing. I mean, I can see WWE's reasoning of being like, well, we'll have Becky like beat down Carmella beforehand, and I could see WWE's reasoning of being like, you know, to, I guess, reestablish her as like a competitor or something. But it wasn't necessary, honestly. But again, in the moment, at this point, like, I am looking past the Carmella thing. I've already forgot she's at ringside. Like, I was okay, we're getting Becky versus Bianca for the women's championship. Yeah. I am 100% on board with this.
Michael Cole says over commentary, like, oh my gosh, we're about to get a dream match that we didn't think we were going to get. And it's happening right now. And then 26 seconds later, it's over. Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch uses one move to defeat Bianca Belair.
To squash Bianca.
Who WWE had just spent a year building up as the person to vanquish Bayley and then Sasha Banks.
So again, this is the point where I was immediately brought back down to the disappointment level of like, what is the reasoning?
Mm-hmm.
You don't like if it's a time thing, if it's like you genuinely didn't allot enough time on the card for that specific segment, then you need to take it from something else so they do have time. Because Becky Lynch is the most popular women's superstar on the planet. I don't think that's that debatable. And having her come back and immediately put the title on her isn't a bad decision. But having her squash your former women's champion who just main evented WrestleMania, who just won your women's Royal Rumble, who you just put so much stake in the last year of your company, having her come back to just squash her and make her look like a geek, what's the point? Like, why would you do that?
If we think that the reasoning behind this storytelling decision was a lack for time, then I can point to at least 20 minutes of things that you could immediately... you could have got rid of Alexa Bliss versus Eva Marie.
Jesus.
And you could have got rid of Drew versus Jinder, which, no offense to them, but those matches were not what was selling the card.
There were four
moments that were selling the card, and then you had RK-Bro start the show, even though they weren't selling the card because they're the most popular people organically right now. Everything else, honestly, you could have cut.
You could have
cut. And it would have been fine.
And even just cut like a minute from each if you want. I don't care. Yeah. It was just... And weirdly enough, having Becky squash Bianca hurts Becky.
Yeah.
If you wanted her to come back to this monumental face pop and face return, that's fine. And she's going to get cheered either way. But now there are people what the hell?
That's the thing, that she's going to get cheered either way, because the other explanation, there's two more explanations for why this went down the way it did. One of them is the actual swerve is that Becky is now a heel. And that by doing this and winning the way she did and kind of like pulling a fast one on Bianca makes her a heel.
Yeah.
But
she can show up on Friday and just run down the crowd or something.
I hope that she does to try to save this, because I think that you point out the problem, though, is that people are going to cheer her regardless.
They're going to cheer her regardless. So
it again, that hurts Bianca more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
There's a third reason for why maybe this was done the way it was. Mm-hmm. Maybe Becky was a late addition. I think that they probably knew for a few days that Sasha wasn't going to be cleared.
Yeah.
And maybe they had to rush Becky to return earlier than they anticipated. And maybe physically she is not cleared to do as much yet as she can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be a thing.
I almost
want it to be that, because then it's almost justifying what a horrible booking decision they made. So
yeah, but if that is what is going on, if it is that she physically was very limited in what she could do, then maybe this is the best way that WWE could have painted themselves out of this corner.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they knew that Sasha couldn't go like 10 days ago, in which case they should have announced it way early.
And
just not put this match on the card, or just put Bianca in like an interview segment and have Becky return. And then I don't know. Like this, I don't see how this was the way. Like, it's funny, we've all been waiting for Becky's return, we've all been really excited for it, and it's like the thing that's like can't miss. And Seth Rollins has been talking about it and is like, you got to be patient, when Becky comes back, it has to be perfect. And this does not feel, this feels reactionary.
This was not perfect.
This doesn't feel like what the plan was all along. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, though, and see, like, if there's someone who can save it, I have a lot of confidence in Becky to do that.
Sure. Yeah.
Can I give you a hot take for SummerSlam?
Of course.
I hate when wrestling promotions run giant stadiums.
Really? The massive football stadiums with the big tiers and everything? Not a fan?
I felt like so much time was wasted in this pay-per-view getting from the entrance to the ring.
Yeah.
For every single match. And I feel like it made it awkward for people like Bianca after they lost to Becky like that to just have to stand in the aisle and then like really have a long walk of shame back. And it's like, this is a very small thing in the matter of, you know, everything.
But it doesn't bother me so much, but I will say, like, you're absolutely right. There were so many awkward moments of people just not being aware of how long that entrance would be. Specifically, one of my favorite was the camera guy. There was a camera angle where I don't remember what match it was or who, but someone was entering for their match, and like you saw how the entrance ramp went down a ways and then it hit a turn towards the ring where the camera guy was like ringside looking at the turn, and they jumped to this camera guy like around the time that they thought the superstar would turn the corner, and they didn't. And so like it jumps to this camera guy just looking at the turn waiting for him, and it's a good like 4 or 5 seconds of nothing happening before they switch to another camera to go back to the superstar who's taking longer than they realized. Like,
yeah,
it was just silly stuff like that.
Speaking about silly stuff, I feel like we should address the other three big matches on this card, right?
Yes.
I don't know if there's anything else that I feel like we need to really.
I mean, we can give you the cliff notes. RK Bro is super over. Their match was fine, nothing too exciting. But
I thought it was an intelligent decision to open the show with that.
Yeah. Putting the belts on them, great. Yeah. Alexa versus Eva Marie with the Dewdrop stuff. Could have done without that. Totally not necessary. Drew and Jinder, again, I like these guys, but this match seemed really like a SmackDown match and totally not needed on a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Also, the Usos won the tag title against the Mysterios. Yep. And Damian Priest defeated Sheamus for the United States Championship.
That was a pretty good match.
Yeah.
Priest for Sheamus, like bell to bell, that was a decent match.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the women's triple threat was a decent match. I thought it was okay.
It might have been my match of the night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good match. I think the finish is a little pooped, but but I think it also suffered. I think that match and Drew versus Jinder suffered by being immediately after Becky and Bianca. Mm-hmm. And I even think that like a bit of Edge versus Seth Rollins, like it took a bit to win the crowd back in that. Cause I think this is what people were in the critical, reaches of the wrestling internet. People were saying this was the best match of the night. Edge versus Seth Rollins. Do you agree with that?
I really liked the women's triple threat.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like the story going into the match, obviously, or the finish, of course, but I thought bell to bell, like they really did great, and this was the best Nikki Ash has looked since for me. So I really enjoyed that match. Edge versus Seth was probably like a close second, right with Roman and Cena, but I don't know. I mean, we're starting to get into the territory of just like good matches on the card, which, again, to be fair, they did have some really good matches that night.
Yeah, I thought this was like there to be a workhorse match. I thought Edge and Seth had obvious chemistry.
Loved the Brood entrance.
That's what I was going to ask about.
So cool.
Who was that for?
That was for you and me. Okay. That was for the old guys. That was for the people who remember Edge and Christian and Gangrel showing up on Monday nights, man.
It felt weird because it's like, I feel like they don't want you to remember Christian right now.
I suppose.
I guess it's weird with Extreme Rules coming up right around the block. Maybe this is just a precursor to like Edge being a full vampire for a match there.
Oh, God.
I mean, I want that. I think that sounds fun. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was telling that they started with the Brood theme, and then they even knew like people want to hear on this day. I see clearly, and then like gave people what they want.
I loved the Brood entrance. I popped for it. I thought it was so great.
I wanted Gangrel to be there too. That would have been a nice little touch. But yeah, this was a very well worked match, and maybe I could see them actually extending the storyline for a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess they're going to extend the storyline as well between Bobby Lashley and Goldberg. Let's get to that. Ooh. The co-main event, 7 minutes and 10 seconds. And it flew by.
Also hated this.
Yeah. Was this the worst thing on the pay-per-view, or is Becky Lynch's return the worst thing on the pay-per-view? Which, what a sentence to say.
I know. I mean, I would clarify that not Becky's return, but Bianca's squash was the worst decision, followed pretty closely by referee stoppage to the Bobby Lashley-Goldberg match.
So I think we may have an opposite opinion on this. Were you
for a faux injury angle? I hated it.
So for you, this match is a failure because of the story that they told. Is that fair to say? Because for me, it is because of the execution of that story by the performers.
See, I would say no. Like, I'm okay with how they portrayed Goldberg getting injured and everything like that. Like, that's fine. I'm upset with that being the decision. I'm upset with Vince McMahon saying, we're going to have Goldberg get faux injured and then have the ref just stop the match at some point. Like, that was my problem. Like,
yeah.
Really? Come on.
Yeah, it felt like act one of a story that they're telling, right? It feels like something that now Goldberg is set up to avenge the beating up of his son. That was the best part. Like, actually, no, sorry. MVP's reaction to that was the
MVP's
funniest
reaction was great because, I when I was watching it with friends, I'm pretty sure I was like, I don't think that kid's 18. Like,
no.
I think Bobby Lashley just beat up a minor on television.
He should have got arrested on Raw. Like, that's what should have happened. Yeah.
So I kind of appreciated the MVP thing of being like, Bobby had no way of knowing who that was.
I love that he went straight from that, being like, oh, sorry, like, didn't know it was your son, to and still champion Bobby Lashley.
Yeah.
And, like, got out of there.
That cracked me up.
Goldberg looked cooked to me.
That's fair. Yeah.
I don't think he should be back in a WWE ring ever. I think this was like when you watch
a
boxer.
Freaking ideally, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like, I have no problem with the guy. I think the guy seems like, you know, for all intents and purposes, like a good dude. But this was like watching a boxer lose their final fight and be like, oh, that person should be retired.
That kid, Sundberg, is 15 years old.
Oh, boy. Sundberg is a great name. But, like, this was the most that I was like, man, this entranceway is too long because Goldberg looked exhausted by the time he got to the ring.
Yeah.
And, like, he did not look comfortable. He really looked like he couldn't pick up Bobby. And I don't think that was because Bobby wasn't allowing himself to be picked up. I mean, luckily, I think that the match was saved from total catastrophe by how vicious the chop blocks looked.
Yeah.
I think that sold the idea that the knee is going to be the injury about as good as you could do it. Yeah. But like they both ended up super bloody, and it was not super bloody, but they both ended up bloody the hard way, and it's because they were being pretty reckless with each other.
That's true.
Like, it was a slop fest. It was like Tim Robinson going out to dinner with a steak and putting a bunch of water on it and being like, sloppy steaks, let's slop them up. That makes sense for people who have watched I Think You Should Leave and to no one else. But that's what it just felt ugly to me.
I can agree on that.
Yeah. So I guess I imagine this is leading to Bobby Lashley versus Goldberg again at Survivor Series, would be my guess.
Survivor Series would make sense.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know what Act 2 should be, but it feels like it's not over.
Yeah, to be fair, Goldberg has one more match on his contract left, supposedly.
Yeah.
Would they do that at Survivor Series, or do you think they're going to do it at the next Saudi Arabia show?
Because I
think Goldberg's got a real good record in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. He is the opposite of John Cena at SummerSlam. I think, is it Crown Jewel the next thing? Is that before Extreme Rules?
I have no idea.
I
would assume they will be taking Goldberg with them to Saudi Arabia.
So. Yeah, maybe that makes sense as the last place to have him go out. I'm very quickly just trying to see when. So the next Crown Jewel is October 21st.
October, okay.
So I feel like Extreme Rules has to be before then, because I was going to say you could do a cinematic match, and maybe that's the best way to use Goldberg at this point.
Yeah,
it certainly was the best way to use The Undertaker when he couldn't work anymore.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, he has, you know, experience on camera in the movie Universal Soldier as well. That's a reference that really outdated me.
What's in Santa's sleigh?
Oh,
do you remember that?
I don't remember that one, but I feel like I could see the cover.
That one was wild.
Yeah, so this was as bad as the Becky versus Bianca match to sell the card as well, but maybe did not have as high expectations to go in with. But the main event, I think this was as good as like sports entertainment can be for me.
Yeah.
I really liked Roman Reigns versus John Cena. How did you feel about it?
I thought it was a really good match. Again, like I'm okay with Cena not winning, of course. I don't know. Like every time I feel like they're gonna pull the trigger on that 17th title run, like at this point I'm not sure they're gonna do it, because I thought like, what better time to do it now after Ric Flair just left the company? So I mean,
it would have
now put the belt on him for a month. You can now establish John Cena as the greatest of all time, who is never going to leave WWE. So I thought it was there were so many like stars aligning for me to be like, wow, John Cena could win this. I'm okay that he didn't. The only gripe I have about like the match itself is that I wish they played that angle up more. I feel like they didn't play it up enough that this match means something to John Cena, not just because he can beat Roman, but it's that 17th title reign.
Yeah.
And they only like sort of mentioned it, but I felt like that should have been the focus.
I was laughing when you started talking about it, because it's like, man, maybe they didn't have Cena go over, because it would have like instantly made those new Super Mario shirts that he had on totally useless at that point.
Yeah, I guess so.
that
was a cool shirt, though. I love that shirt.
I loved the Titantron that was all of the 16 championships that Cena had won. And I thought that was a really subtle way, rather than having Michael Cole say over and over again. I mean, like, it could have been anybody in commentary. Sorry, Michael Cole. But to have the commentator be like, he's been champion 16 times.
Yeah.
Like to just visually put that in the background and on the shirt, I thought was a more subtle way to show, instead of telling I knew that 100% that John Cena was not going to win when they added the useless stipulation prior to the match that if Reigns had lost, he would leave WWE.
Yeah. Like, that's your dead giveaway. Why?
This is not the first time they've done it. And I, if there's one thing that I could erase from WWE and their storytelling playbook, this would actually be it. I don't like adding a loser leaves town stipulation, especially with like on the go home show.
Yeah.
I think it ruins, it does the exact opposite thing that a go home show should do, which is like to make you feel like you absolutely have to buy the pay-per-view because you absolutely have to know who's going to win and you have to feel like both people can. And this did the exact opposite. You knew Roman Reigns isn't going to leave.
Exactly.
He's the biggest star in the company. And he's finally on like a hot streak, both critically and in like a numbers way. Mm-hmm. Like I tried not to let it ruin the match for me, which I guess it didn't because they didn't mention it very much. Stipulation during the match. But I thought that the story that they told of John looking like he had ring rust and like, oh man, this might be a squash just like his squash against Brock. And then it made the comeback feel more organic and more intense when it did happen. And it was smart to put Brock in the back of our mind by referencing that match because then at the end of the show, Brock Lesnar comes out. People popped pretty hard for that. How do you feel about Brock coming back to WWE?
Honestly, I wasn't excited about Brock coming back until he got in the ring and I remembered that Paul Heyman was there. This always happens with Roman of late. Like, I forget that Paul Heyman is in his corner and I forget about Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar. So once Brock's music hit, honestly, I was a little oh, okay. And it felt to me, and exactly my whole theory is it felt very reactionary of this is WWE of like, well, Punk's back in AEW. What can we do? Break glass for Brock Lesnar. You know what I mean? Like they pulled the Brock Lesnar lever for an emergency and brought him back. But
I mean, maybe that's why they had to cut all these people. It's like they needed to have that cash on hand.
So they could
pay the bag. Yeah.
Some seven figures to get Brock there or something. But the second Brock like got to the ring and I saw Heyman and I could see Heyman's reactions and stuff. Now I'm on board, actually. I'm actually really excited about the story you can tell here. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see, like, there's this added tension now of, like, will Heyman turn on Roman? Like, what's... I'm for it.
Yeah. I'm excited for the next few months probably to be... for this to be the focus, which is crazy to say because when Lesnar and Reigns have, you know, driven the road to WrestleMania twice before, I've had no interest in it.
Yep.
Maybe Brock being away for a bit, you know, put some shine back on him. But you're right. The thing is that you have the best promo in WWE, Paul Heyman, right at the center of this with an actual like soap opera tie to both wrestlers. So like this is going to be the brawl for Paul for the next few months, I would imagine. And it, like I hope it ends with Paul Heyman in a shark cage above the ring. Actually, I don't hope for that.
Please.
But like I hope it becomes a story of which horse is Paul going to back, you know?
Yeah.
And like it I like the idea of Brock courting Paul again and being like sweet to him. Like, I think this is going to be a weird storyline for WWE, but I think it's going to be a great one, or it has potential to be a great one, at least. So they hooked me. Is that, you think, the biggest thing you saw circulated news-wise coming out of SummerSlam was Brock's return and not Becky's?
Weirdly enough... yes, and I think it's because they kind of botched the Becky's return. So had they done Becky's right, had Becky like had like a, you know, a somewhat competitive 10-minute match with Bianca and won, like I think that might have been the headline, but
Yeah.
But also, you also have to understand, like, even now, somehow in Vince's mind, Brock is still a bigger star than Becky, so.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I feel like they could be bigger stars than each other day in and day out. Like it's,
yeah, exactly. They're
at pretty close levels no matter who's ahead. Mm-hmm. So then we go, I guess we should jump to Sunday night then. Or we can go straight to Monday night and talk about Karrion Kross's new outfit.
Oh, no. We won't do that. No. that guy.
Let's go to NXT. Where I think the most interesting things that happened during NXT TakeOver 36 were all things that were implied outside of the ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
This felt like an NXT swan song in a sense, yeah. Because if you've been reading reports, the show is going to go back to being taped. It's going to change its philosophy about who they feature and why. It's going to go back to being solely a developmental program.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fascinating because it signals a shift of power internally within WWE. And it is a move that has angered their network partners. That USA has like come out, and not just like sources say, like people have come out and have said like this is not like we paid for a live show. So I mean maybe Vince McMahon is fine to eat the cost of NXT if like it means USA gets so disgruntled that they're like we're gonna cancel it. Because again the point of WWE right now seems to be to make it a lean operating fighting machine. But the other speculation was about if this is the last time that we are going to see Adam Cole in a WWE ring.
Yeah.
He lost in the 2 out of 3 falls match that was the rubber match in his feud with Kyle O'Reilly. He did not appear on Monday Night Raw. Tyler, if you had to put money on it, where is Adam Cole going to show up next?
I think he's going to AEW.
Okay.
I just like for the many reasons of why wouldn't he go to AEW? Your like partner works there. Literally your closest group of friends seem to work there. If that in itself is not an immediate telling of why he would go to AEW, but just again, like you can see the trajectory of what is happening with NXT. Maybe again, there was reporting that he met personally one-on-one with Vince McMahon to talk about his future in the company. So maybe Vince promised him the world, and yeah. I can see how it could be really hard to say no in that situation, but
yeah,
like were I in his shoes, I can't fathom a situation where you wouldn't sign with AEW. But
yeah, it's hard to say no to working with your wife and all your best friends, right?
Exactly.
But I do think I think he's gonna show up on Raw soon. I really do. And
well, his extension, I guess, is. It fully expires on Friday, this coming Friday.
Yeah. Although and there's been a lot of like reports and retractions about that. So
at
like who knows?
At this point
yeah.
he can't at this point he hasn't re-signed anything, but even still until his extension is up, he's not like legally allowed to receive offers from other companies.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure he's probably had phone calls, but
he can talk to his wife though.
Exactly.
So
yeah. But you know. I think, so I think, I don't know, it just, maybe.
The only reason I say WWE is where he's going to stay is Vince has said the stuff in his media scrums, I guess, recently about when asked about AEW directly, saying they're not competition, and if they, like, we'd be happy to send more people for their roster their way, right? There was that thing he said that people felt really icky about, but he publicly said he's fine with cutting people that he doesn't think are going to move the needle. Sorry, Nick Khan said, like, we're going to cut people who don't move the needle. But this is the kind of, like, ruthless aggression, I guess, that the two top people in WWE are putting out there. They're saying, like, we care about a very select group of talent and everyone else is expendable. So when you are Adam Cole and you are having continual meetings with Vince McMahon, that tells me that he act like, as small as he is and as indie as he is, that he is one of these people that Vince McMahon sees as the pool, the inner circle of, like, really valuable people.
See, that's,
because he would just let him walk otherwise, right?
The part that I can't understand, though, is, like, why would you believe him? Even if Vince told you that personally, it's also been reported with the NXT thing. They're literally like, we don't want short indie guys.
Yeah.
And Adam Cole is a short indie guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is exactly what they're saying they don't want. So, like, why would you ever believe them? I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is. He is totally not what they have been describing as the person that they're going to focus on. But that can be true, and Vince McMahon could love Shawn Michaels, right? And I think
that's true.
And maybe that is what he sees in Adam Cole. And I would not
Daniel
be surprised.
Daniel Bryan is main evented WrestleMania. So
yeah.
I mean.
So maybe he sees Adam Cole as filling that hole, which no other small guy on the main roster has filled, in Vince's opinion. I imagine maybe, like, do you think, does it seem that Vince McMahon is higher on Adam Cole than he is on Finn Balor?
At this point, yeah, it does.
Yeah, so, because I think he could be a bigger star. Yeah,
there was a time where Vince McMahon was equally high on Finn Balor. Finn Balor
if
debuted
not more.
On the main roster, won the Universal Championship immediately, and of course, due to injury, had to drop it. But, like, look how far Finn Balor has fallen down the card.
Yeah,
comparatively. So, like, sure, maybe Vince is super into Adam Cole right now, but there's no guarantee or anything that it's going to be that way in a year or even in a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I feel this way. I'm trying to express it, like, why I feel like he has a higher ceiling in WWE than he does in AEW right now. Cause I've seen people be like, if he goes to AEW, he will immediately be in the world title scene. And I don't buy that at all.
If anything, I can agree with you there. I actually do. I would agree. He does have a higher ceiling in WWE because AEW, again, like, AEW's roster is already stacked, and especially in the world title scene, not to mention just, like, storylines that already have the world title scene taken up that need to come to fruition, the Adam Page storyline. But when you got guys like Kenny Omega and now CM Punk and potentially Daniel Bryan and all these other guys, like, Adam Cole becomes just another guy.
Yeah. There. And there aren't as many people on the main roster in WWE who look like him. As opposed to, the biggest rising star in AEW is also named Adam and also has long blonde hair and is also a former member of the Bullet Club. Yeah, there's a lot there. But this is clearly what people were talking about more than the actual show, which is too bad because
there were some really good matches.
I mean, was the best match of the weekend Dragunov versus Walter too?
Yeah.
Is that fair? Is it, like, definitely undisputable?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my bold prediction has been destroyed by Ilya Dragunov. I wanted Walter to keep that belt for years, but
I'm excited to see what they're going to do with Walter now, though. Hopefully it's not nothing. Hopefully they have a plan in place for what
I think
this
we
means
might
for him.
I think we might see Walter on Raw pretty soon.
That would be great. I would be all for that. Another person we're going to I'm sorry that we're just, like, speeding past Dragunov and Walter, but I'm sure we'll talk about it after WrestleMania this next year when we talk about our top 10 matches of the year.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about someone else who is now only going to be on Raw, and that's Karrion Kross. He dropped the NXT championship to Samoa Joe, who is now the first three-time NXT champion, who won with the Muscle Buster, which was a nice little surprise.
Bringing it back.
This was a short little match. Who has the brighter future in WWE programming, and like the immediate future, Samoa Joe or Karrion Kross?
Samoa Joe, hands down. My condolences to you, Karrion Kross. It's gonna be a rough road, my dude.
Who now I've seen described, Karrion Kross described as being an edgelord is what he looks like.
Edgelord. I've heard some other words.
He looks kind of like a knight. He's got a lot of business going on.
I was going to say he kind of looks like, what's his face? Humongous from Mad Max.
Yeah, Nathan Jones.
Yeah, you mean? Yeah, Nathan Jones.
Man, Nathan Jones, pretty good comp for Karrion Kross as a wrestler, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to be a pet project of Vince still.
I
know he's got stupid gear, but I think he's still going to have TV time. Samoa Joe, I could see being a short champion or having a short reign as NXT champion for the third time.
Yeah.
I think maybe logically the thing to do is to move Walter to NXT proper. Now have Walter versus Joe is an amazing
I'd love to
matchup.
See that match.
And but. Then maybe you run back Walter's long title reign just on NXT, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that, definitely.
I mean, if NXT is trying to focus more on big guys, then Walter's about as big as they come.
Yep. And the other thing that I do just want to mention is you got to give it up for your new $1 million champion, Cameron Grimes. He's going to the moon, baby.
He's going to the moon indeed. I know it can't happen because of where they are, but I really want to see a world where Cameron Grimes shows up to help out Baron Corbin at this point.
Oh, yes. That's great.
I don't know how these two people became my two like must-watch people on WWE programming, but that's how I feel.
That's so good. I love that.
So apologies to NXT to kind of like go through it quickly. I feel like we might have to do an episode just about the history of NXT if these proposed changes come to fruition.
Yeah,
it does feel like
there would feel like a definite beginning and end.
Yeah. And it won't be the NXT takeover of the end from a while back. That's okay. We talked for longer than we need to, but it was a monumental weekend, one that we will always remember as the time that CM Punk came back, that Becky Lynch came back. I think we're going to remember that forever, and that the Brood came back. I think those will be those
if
will
only
be the
for
things.
A brief minute.
Yeah. So we will get back to you guys very soon with another new episode. I'm sure we'll have more things that we'll have to respond to between now
and all out.
And as we're going forward. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to plug or say before we get out of here, Tyler?
No, not at the moment.
Wonderful. As I said earlier, I don't have a script for this episode. So you can find us on muchadowrestling.com, or you can find our Facebook page, Much Ado About Wrestling, or you can email us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. I think I actually got it pretty much correct. And we're going to leave you in the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Hey, Cole Cabana, how you doing?
Oh, no.
That's something. I'm excited to see what we're going to get out of that.